broadcast this morning. And Dan and I are committed, and I know this radio audience is, to see if we can't be part of a solution of what's going on in our community and has been going on for many, many years. And, you know, Dan, I was just talking with this young lady that's sitting beside me.
Deborah Davis.
And what, no relation.
No relation.
I wish she was. She has got a tremendous idea. And
we just want to update on what's going on in Britain, though, Brad. The Chamberlain School is in lockdown. There's no students in the school, but there was a shooting in the vicinity of the school. So the Chamberlain School in New Britain is on lockdown this morning, so we want to pass that story along. And again, we want to introduce our guests here in studio, beginning with Bishop Henry Brown, and then we have Henrietta Beckman, President, Mothers United Against Violence, Bishop Jim Curry from New Haven, we have Deborah Davis, we have Pastor Sam Saylor. We're talking about what are we going to do to solve this problem, which has gone on for decades in Hartford, in our urban areas across the state, let's not kid ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's been accentuated over the last couple of weeks with the fatal shooting of 15-year-old Keon Huff. And then Pastor Sam talks about the 89-year-old woman in the apartment building where this shooting took place. She hasn't been the same since because she heard the gunfire. And then we had another shooting last night, and two young children were witness to this shooting outside of a Dunkin' Donuts across the street from Hartford Hospital. So it's just accentuated, and we've got to do something about it. So I know Deborah wanted to say something.
Deborah has something that she did, which is underway, Deborah, which I think is a unique idea, and it involves golf.
Yes. Thank you, Brad. Yes, and Dan, thank you. I am the mother, of course, of Philip Samuel. And 7 years ago, Philip was shot and killed. And at that point, our whole lives just turned upside down. My daughters, everyone, but the first thing I started to think about is safe spaces. And how can we help to create safe spaces for our kids? Because going to CVS could be very dangerous. Going down to the other end of the street could be very dangerous. And just walking, and maybe having the wrong sneakers on, maybe looking the wrong way, maybe having the wrong girlfriend could probably get you shot and killed. And this was a tragedy. This is the tragedy of our neighborhoods now. So what I did is I put together Philip Samuel Davis Jr. Foundation. And working with Mothers United Against Violence, as I'm on the board, we absolutely started to think about how important it was, and for me, to create a safe space. So since I played golf, I thought a great way to really introduce some of our young people who play wonderful basketball, which we love, and we do so many different things with sports. But golf was something that I saw that was an opportunity to use our kids to focus on their goals, to use them to set some benchmarks in their life, to show them how to respect each other, to show them how to have a respect for life. It wasn't just you stepped on my toes and I'm not going to forgive you and I may shoot you for that. Or you took my sunglasses. So we are talking about the basic elements of respect. And with golf, I can help them learn how to just take back that whole mentality of learning how to respect each other and love each other. And that if you're my brother or sister, I want to help keep you. I want to help keep you safe. So what golf does, it helps them to, first of all, it creates a location for them to dispense some of the anxieties that our kids suffer. Because we don't know what they go through. They could be going through a lot of different anxiety levels that we don't and sometimes can't see. And then, so it helps them to sometimes get some of those energies out, as basketball does. But golf gives them a peace as well. And I remember seeing some kids on the golf course. I've been doing this for 5 years now. This is our fifth annual golf tournament coming up on June 10th at the Keeney Park golf course here in Hartford. And we did the first one out in Avon, second one in Avon, the third one at Bloomfield at the Wittenberry, and the fourth one at Keeney, and this is the fifth one at Keeney as well. So we want to keep them as close to their communities as possible. But I wanted to encourage them of how to respect each other and love each other. So the basic tenets of being, of understanding who they are, what they can accomplish, and how powerful they can be in their lives, just focusing on something that is totally, totally opposite of being in a turmoil, of living in turmoil. When they go to school, they could potentially be getting bullied. When they go, I mean, anywhere they go, there's a, and we talk about bully to another level. Bullying is not just, oh, you look terrible or that's not what you're supposed to wear. No, you have my girlfriend. You are speaking too proper. You speak too well. So I think I want to take you out because you're a little better than me. These are the kinds of things that we sometimes have to deal with. This, I believe, is coming back to the basic elements of how to and helping our kids learn how to love each other and respect each other. And Mrs. Beckman's grandson is a great golfer. Randy has been with us for all the years now. We actually are contacting different golf courses and to ask them if they have a caddy training. Because we're trying to get them involved. We want to make sure that we don't want to lose another young man. We don't want to lose another young lady. We want to make sure that not just in Hartford, but around our communities, they could be supportive. And some of the golf courses have great programs, and they can bring our kids in. They can get little scholarships. They can get stipends. And I remember hearing from one of our wonderful first tee folks, Bobby Powell. He said to me, back in the day, if you got to a good course, you know, they would provide scholarships for you. If somebody liked you and they saw some potential in you, they would say, hey, I'm gonna reach out to that young man or that young woman. And that person was successful because he had a safe space. Yes, he had to go back to school, but he understood where he could go to create a safe space. And so I want to thank you for just, you know, not just being part of the reactionary, but we now have to be part of the solution. And I think this is where we're going. Mothers United Against Violence, all of the groups that we work with in a collaborative effort, we have a stake at this. And not just because I lost a child, because I was a teacher at one time as well. So I saw the children in the classroom, and I kept thinking, oh, a powerful little a doctor, a powerful little lawyer. I saw these in these children. We don't want to lose them. And I think I would love to have your support on that effort. It's a great thing that we do from the heart, and we've been working with First Tee down in Cromwell. We are going to be part of the Travelers Championship. So we are looking forward to making sure that we help to remedy some of the situations that our kids are placed in.
No, what a great story. Reverend Brown, last night there was... Oh, we're coming up on traffic? Okay, why don't we...
Yes, let's check that traffic 16 minutes
out. He wants to join in on the conversation. So, Dr. Fritchman, good morning.
Dr. Fritchman.
Good morning.
Good morning, doctor.
Hey, Brad, you may remember that I tried to put together a program for tennis. We went to Central Connecticut State College, you and I.
I remember.
Spoke to the president, got the tennis coach to agree that his players would help teach kids from the North End. Not only that, they would actually mentor them. And what I spoke to the president about was hopefully these kids would do well and be mentored and wind up maybe even getting a scholarship to Central. And I was going to pay for the buses. I was going to pay for the rackets, everything. We picked out a school we were going to do it at. We spoke to the principal. They were going to allow the kids to be able to come down. But then the ball got dropped by the administration in Hartford. You remember maybe we went to see the mayor back then.
I remember. I certainly do.
But, you know, this is a societal thing, and it's like areas like North Hartford, and they're all over the country. They're just forgotten. People drive through, and they shrug their shoulders, and these are our neighbors, and they're part of our community, and we're just letting people down. And when you let people down and the school system deteriorates and there is crime and there's blight and there's, you know, it's just not functioning the way it used to function, it's a crisis. And as you know, I try really hard to do the best I can, but it's just society in general has to look at an awful event like this and the things that have been going on and make up their mind that they're truly going to get involved and do the things that need to be done to make it a more productive area. Because if you had a farm of 100 acres, you wouldn't take 20 acres and just not water them or fertilize them because you didn't care. But why do we in this country just allow this to go on? North Hartford's a fantastic example because from where my office is, within 10 minutes, you can walk to West Hartford. It's an entirely different world. The school systems are different. Everything is different. Why would we allow this to go on year after year? I'm going to leave with this comment. I always think of the young kids that are, you know, they've got a chance. They've got a shot. And every day that goes by that they aren't getting what they need, we're setting the stage for tragedies like this to happen. And it just isn't, to me, it isn't what America is all about.
Yeah. Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, everybody
Thank
obviously
you.
Shaking their heads.
God bless.
Okay, so we had the meeting last week. What happens next?
Yep.
Well, Brad, listen, I know Reverend said he's chomping at the bit, but for me, we had to establish some form of policy here. Look, I'm not a fan of going to these meetings and basically hearing the same thing over and over. And that's pretty much what it was. You know, you're hearing the same old thing. You're hearing people crying out, we need help. But we're not giving them that help. Because I don't really believe that we are listening to them sincerely for what they are saying. You know, there's so much pain and grief in our community that I think that, quote unquote, some of our leaders that said it's legislate us, I really think that they should be more accountable. Particularly the ones that look like us, they should be more accountable for bringing resolutions and action to enhance our community. I see they join in with the fight when other representatives or legislators, however you want to talk about them, they join in for the fight for them. But there's no talk about resolution for the violence here in Offord. And to me, that is bothersome. I don't want to see our state rep come to an event and sit down and listen, but they don't tell the people or empower the people that we're going to do all we can do to fight for you. And not just only them. Our church is so invisible in this plight because so many people have been murdered on the churches right in front of the church or around the churches, and yet it's still we are not empowering our people. Then our community, we don't empower each other because we sit there, we see these things happen, but we don't speak out about them. You know, we see people murdered, but nobody would say, look, I know who did it. And these are the type of things that we have to come to the table and be truthful about it and say, just look, we got to tie all these things in. Everybody have a role here. Everybody has to play a role. From the governor, the mayor, the church, the pastor, the community, everybody, lawmakers, everybody. Because like this caller just said, so much is going by our kids. They see these things and they know, hey, if you're not out here fighting for me, if you're not doing anything, speaking on my behalf, I'm falling through a hole. And we can't allow our kids to speak falling through the hole. And I want to say this too. Going back to what Pastor Saylor said about that 85-year-old woman. She's not the only one. We have constant grandmothers that bullets don't flew over their heads like they sit in the living room. We have had people, man, afraid to come out of their house and walk the street now. They don't want to sit on that porch anymore. They are afraid to let their kids go out on the street. These are the type of things, man, that's gripping our community. But yet still, we can get to a place where we talk, but we don't have no action. We got to have action. I want to thank Dr. Fishman. Touched me on what he said.
Yes, sir.
And basically, we did about a month or so ago in front of City Halls. We did a Red Glove movement press conference where we said the blood of these victims are on the hands of everybody who do nothing and see something and say nothing. Every day, thousands of people ride into our city. Every day, people listen to the broadcasters about the fallen bodies falling. Every day, you look at the economics, and there's no way in a state as rich as Connecticut that we should have impoverishment the way we do in the city, unless it's by design. And your silence in your 168 other towns, your sense of comfortability, your sense of worth, and your sense of values that you have about yourself, if they are absent the love of people who don't have nothing, who have very nothing. They have nothing to live off. They have nothing to offer their children. They have no chimneys for Santa Claus to come down to. The hopelessness in our communities that feel this deadly parade that we in, and you shake your head and say, that's a shame. It's the shame is on us who have something, who know something, and do nothing about it. He's right. When you have, we have Over 80% of our policemen live out of the city. Over 80% of our firemen live out of the city. Over 85% of our teachers live out of the city. Every day, millions of dollars is being taken out of the city by our employers. Every day, that money is going out of our city coffers, and none of it's staying at home. You have entrenched impoverishment, and it's not the cause of people. Donald Trump is right. What do we got to lose? You've killed our schools. You've put unemployment in our community, and you've done nothing about it. Well, we still have more to lose. We've got a 15-year-old to lose. We've got another brother to lose. We're going to lose more because people are sitting back in the comfortability of their homes and thinking that it can't happen to them. Well, I invite you to go watch the Newtown movie that's going to come out nationally on April 3rd, or to come to Wesleyan on Saturday to watch it and hear the testimony of the people who lived in the beautiful rolling hills of Newtown and realize that violence has no respect to borders. And if you do nothing about it, if you say nothing about it, it will knock on your door. I'm a witness to that. I'm like Deborah. It ain't going to happen to me. I'm a pastor. I pay my taxes. I stop at yellow lights. I go to church. I pay my tithes. I sing to the Lord. I'm covered. But on one Saturday on the 20th of October, I get a call that says my son is dead. Simply because some gun ended up in the hands of a 20-year-old. So that day, two 20-year-olds lost their life. Because 40 years, his assailant got. 40 years, his murderer got. He'll never see the light of day. For 40 years. For 40 years. And that's what Mothers United Against Violence do. I need to say this about them. People want to know, what do? They show up. When you're in pain and you don't know why the sun has forsaken you, why God has turned it back on you, they show up to let you know he hasn't. And while your mind is raging and pain and revenge, you say, look, I know you want to go out there and get street justice. But let me tell you something. If we fight together, if we work together, we can bring you sweet justice. And that's what I got. I got sweet justice. Me and my son's mom, we got sweet justice. We were able to stand before his murderer as he was being convicted by the judge for 40 years in jail for killing my son because people responded at that vigil. They responded to the call for justice. They responded for the call to get involved. And they answered the call. The police chief of detectives said, Major Crime said, unprecedented community support would lead to the murderer being caught of this 15-year-old. I said, oh, it happened in my neighborhood. It happened in Garden Street. It can happen elsewhere where we as a community get involved, but we need the greater community to say that we have value in our community and we're worth it, and you will come out of your suburbs. You'll wake up out of your sense of safety and say, we need to do more. We can do more.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're coming up on break. We have a half hour to go. Anybody would like to...
Quite a morning for you. I want to go to... this is Hartford, Connecticut.
Sandra in Hartford.
Sandra in Hartford. Sandra, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, I would like to thank you, Brad, and Dan, for having this program. I hope that there will be a lot of people that are listening and calling and want to know how we can help. These are our neighbors. These are people that we see all the time because they're our neighbors. And they're saying that they need help. And why aren't we helping them? And why aren't the other pastors, other than Reverend Brown, he's done a wonderful job. But he can't do it alone. We have to get together and stop this and do what we can to help our neighbors.
Thank you.
Sandra, well said. What about it? Are you getting, obviously we have Pastor Sam here, we've got Bishop Curry and the Reverend Brown. Are you getting help from the other churches?
It's sad to say. Spattering, but we don't get the type of support that we really need. Many of these murders happen in our Hartford cities. We have churches in every community, and I don't know what the reason are, but they won't support what we do. That's time where we could take donations that we can use to enhance us. We have a march coming up on the 8th of April, and we have sent letters. a march.
Where?
Our annual march is our 9th annual march that's coming up. That's a fire right there, Brad. And we want the church to come. If they can't come, send some representative, you know. But be involved so that our community can know that you are involved. For years I have toiled in this labor, for years. Man, I can't even go on vacation, you know, because there's no one that our community can rely on when they fall victim to these violent crimes and these violent acts. It's sad. Sometimes when I'm all alone, man, I cry real tears because I can't cry in public because I can't let other people see me cry. But the support is a necessity that we must have, because the only way we're going to empower our neighborhood, to me, and this is my belief, I talked to Reverend Saylor about it, I talked to Bishop Curry about it, is that the church absolutely got to be involved in this. Because if they're not involved in that, we can talk all we want, nothing's going to change until the people see that the church is acting engaged in what's going on. Yeah,
Reverend Brown met with some of the pastors last week. You know,
good things happened out of that meeting.
And so they're showing some interest. But this march, the 9th march, is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you are out there listening and you want to get involved, you want to show some sense of solidarity and commitment, mm-hmm. we invite you out on April 8th. To this march. It starts at the Main and Tower section of Hartford, right where the clock tower is there. We invite you to come out, march with it. We have over 400 crosses that got to be carried. Each cross has the names of a fallen life that is falling in the streets of Hartford. And we carry those crosses. We have a memorial for them at the state capitol. We have people that give some speeches. But it's a show of solidarity. It shows the families that are still aching from the loss of their families that their family and their pain is real, and that they have value when you come out and you spend time with them for a few hours. So if you're not doing anything on Saturday, April 8th, 2017, starting at Main and Tower, Main and Albany Avenue in Hartford with a clock tower there, and moving toward the state capitol, come and carry a cross. Come and be in the gap. Come and acknowledge the fact that human life still has value, no matter what color your
Absolutely.
Skin is.
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to promote this on this program.
Yes, we are.
Absolutely, Dan. Absolutely.
Thank you. And, you know, Reverend Saylor, listen, man, I thank you. I want to say this. I want to say it publicly. I want people to understand that this minister ain't just Reverend Brown. I thank God for the Henrietta Beckman. I thank God for Deborah Davis. I thank God for Reverend Sam Saylor, Bishop John Curry. These people mean so much to Mothers United Against Violence because of the input they have and the influence they have. You know, I could never, ever be able to do the things that I do without these people's input. And I'm so thankful that God put these people around me. And I know that more is going to come. But right now, the core is here. These people work tireless. These people show up. And look, as you can see, they support me tremendously. So I'm so grateful. And I had to say that in public. I know they want you know, acknowledge that. Oh, Reverend Brown, that's all right. No, because this is coming from my heart. I love them dearly. And Mothers United Against Violence, Henrietta Beckman. I have to tell you a story about Henrietta Beckman. Mrs. Beckman been with me since the inception of Mothers United Against Violence. This woman is a married woman. She have grandkids. She a working woman. She have a household she has to maintain. But she has never, ever sit down on when I call her and tell her we need to do something. Mr. Beckman, I have a video over here. Mr. Beckman, I have to go meet this family here. She always answers the bell. And I know it has never been easy for her, but she has been there every step of the way with me since 2003. And I'm so grateful because she is my strength. She could have walked away, but she never walked away. I've seen times when she was angry. I've seen times when she was upset. Oh, Reverend Brown, I said, Reverend Mrs. Beckman, I need you. And every time I say, Mrs. Beckman, I need you, she never, ever said no. So I want to get this opportunity to say that to you. Jim Curry, I'm in the first day I seen you, this tall white guy walking, coming to a march, and I saw him over there. You know?
I like that, this tall white guy.
Because he was tall.
He's calling your angel.
He's my white angel. He's my white angel. And he had this big, big old hat on, right? Remember that bishop? And I'm like, gosh, man, that man had wearing that hat. But at the time, I didn't know he was a bishop. But after it was all over, when he came over and introduced himself to me, he said, look, I want to be a part of this. And he ended up being on our team. And I'm so grateful to him. Pastor Sam Saylor. You know, I got to say this about Sam Saylor. Hey, look, he could have did something else. But he chose to work with me. And I'm grateful for that. When he lost his son, he came to me and he's brought him in. And he's been with me ever since. We don't have to, along with Bishop, we don't walk the halls of our Congress. We have been down in Newtown. We have been all over the city, state, out of the city, going to try to do the same thing. So I'm grateful for him. Deborah Davis, she came along when she lost her son. I'll never forget her. The first time I seen her, and she sung at her son's funeral. I remember all of that. I remember all these good things. But these people are real life stories, and these people have suffered a great loss in their life. And I just want people to understand that the pain when you lose a loved one, it never goes away. You know, people look at people that live in Harvard and say, "Oh, they're dying down there." Yes, they're dying, but that just the victim didn't die; the family died. You know, and that's what we need to understand. That one time, like this 17-year-old kid that killed that 15-year-old kid, he killed two families. That's excellent. And nobody want to talk about that 17-year-old kid, but guess what? He's a victim, too, and he needs help. So these are the type of things, man. These are real-life stories.
Yeah, Brevin, when Brevin Brown starts throwing names out there, I'm sure about 10 other people, 20 other people he forgot, so you're going to get in trouble for that. But the key matter, I need you to, you're listening on and understand the impact of Mother's Day against violence from me being an observer and watching over the years when you're as consistent as Mother's Day against violence and Reverend Brown then. You know, people expect when horror happens to them, Reverend Brown and Mother's Day against violence to show up. Our past mayor went with Reverend Brown one time to an Hispanic house, a high-profile murder. He went there to show his... But they pushed him aside to talk to Reverend Brown. I remember some other big executives went with Reverend Brown, and they were related to the victim's family, and they pushed them aside to talk to Reverend Brown. Because when you don't own anything and you don't have any value and life seems to be, you know, an uphill battle for you, the only sense of value that you know, and someone's going to speak property and value to the life of your child, no matter what their past have been, is Mother's Day Against Violence and Reverend Brown. He's been the most consistent sense of compassion that our community, not every community, because if you're high profile, you're going to get everybody to show up. But when you're low profile and nobody knows you, you don't have no name, and your life has been telling you all your life that you're nobody. But when somebody shows up in your pain, of your hour of pain, you tend to hold on to them saying, okay, this is real, I'm real, my child has value. And that's what Mother's United, that's the essence that it brings, that no one else can bring. It's a calling from God all by himself that causes this ministry into effect. And if other people out there, you know that God is speaking to your heart, that you've been called into a ministry like this to meet people in their hour of crisis and need and show up and represent him. And if you are, you need to give Mothers United Against Violence a call at 860-461-2403. Get involved with this ministry because it's a ministry of compassion and God delivers it. And if you are a servant of God, then you need to answer this call. And that's what we do. And when you don't, when your life is the darkest and it becomes even more dark and someone opens the door and says, it's going to be all right, you can keep your sanity. And I've been a witness.
Well, we're going to get
that.
Behind this.
Yes.
Well, let me tell Guaranteed. You about another component of Mothers United Against Violence, and that's a program we have now called Circle of Compassion. And this program was created by Mrs. Beckman to be an ongoing support system for the families of victims of violence in our city. We try to reach out to especially mothers and fathers who have been traumatized by the death or the wounding of their children. And monthly, this group meets to look at what we might do next to support these families. Mrs. Beckman is a great organizer for that program. And I need to say, because we haven't said it yet, she's an incredible preacher when she can get the microphone.
She's going to get the mic before the show's over.
When she gets the microphone, what you're hearing is the truth of love and the power of hope. So Circle of Compassion is a program that is growing and growing, and the idea of connectedness. It's easy to spend one day with a family, it's much more difficult to keep an ongoing relationship through the midst of their trauma.
Okay, we have time to take a call. Let's go to John in Hartford. John, welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. This is a very good show. I've passed the word out to many people that I can, but I want to ask Brad Davis a question, saying that, Brad Davis, you want to be instrumental in helping start something new. Brad, you have the luxury of being a member of the First Cathedral Church, which is the largest mega church in New England. You also know Bishop Leroy Bailey. You know Curtis Robinson, two multi-millionaires. Seeing that these two individuals have a proven track record of knowing how to take something from a small level and establish something on a large-scale level, seeing that the fact that in Connecticut there's really no black-owned banks, there's no financial institutions in our in the cities, you have the ability to correlate some type of meeting maybe that could be looked into, how we can establish a financial institution right here in Hartford. And I don't know, again, if you think it's necessary. I don't know if you're interested in looking into doing this, because until we get some form of access to capital and credit and we can start to establish a new form of a new economy, we don't need to continue telling our residents all they can grow up to be is just really job seekers and now job beggars in areas where you have no job growth, and then you run into obstacles. You may not be qualified. You may not have the proper transportation system. So this is a major problem, but I would like to get a feedback from you, Brad Davis. Would you be willing to talk to Bishop Leroy?
All right, Taylor? John, let him answer. Running out of time. Okay. Thanks for the call, John.
I talk to the bishop all the time. And you didn't plant the idea when this all started. I've already been thinking about it. And trust me, as a member of First Cathedral, I will be meeting with them, talking with them, and I know that they certainly will want to know the whole story, and they'll hear the whole story, and we'll do something.
Okay, we're coming up on a short break. We've got about 30 seconds during this segment. Go ahead, Deborah.
I just wanted to add in, I want to thank the caller very quickly, because we've been echoing every year, jobs, jobs, not just pushing snow or pushing trash around or moving someone's furniture from here to here. These individuals, these kids need jobs. They need internships, and they need to be in corporate, because some of them have what we call the heart of work.
Okay.
And right now it's 10 minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock in the morning, and we will be
wrapping up our program. We'll try to get to some calls, so callers hang in there. Henrietta, the floor is yours.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to thank Brad and Dan for inviting us here today. I just have to say that, you know, this problem that's going on in Hartford is not just a Hartford problem. It's all of our surrounding towns. Like, I met a lady in the grocery store the other day, and she was talking about she felt guilty because she lived in Hartford, but now she's in Bloomfield, and she feels like she's abandoned Hartford. So I feel like a lot of these surrounding towns have abandoned Hartford, and they need to get back to help them, because you still have families in there that are hurting, and they are your family. So we all have a part in this. It doesn't matter what color, what race you are, we all have a part.
We have a caller on the line. Okay, let's go to the phones.
Okay, let's go to Bruce in Bridgeport. Bridgeport, good morning, morning. Good morning.
Good morning. For your panel, really quickly, it's a complex question, but it's a simple question. What role does local, state, and federal government play in this situation, and what role can they play to help alleviate it? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question.
We got the doctor here. Go ahead, doctor.
I think here in Hartford, we've had great success in partnering with the Hartford Police Department. And our relationship, especially with Chief Ravella and Deputy Chief Brian Foley, has really helped us both understand what's happening on the ground from the law enforcement side of things, but also has helped us to organize so that we can do the work of community organizing. So that's one. I think the other is that we need to continue to both challenge and invite our elected officials to be part of the grassroots movement. at the vigil for Keon Huff, the chief showed up, the deputy chiefs showed up, the mayor was there. And those are tremendous supports for a community that are in crisis. We've said it a lot this morning, show up, and that's a way to create the kind of partnerships we need.
Deborah.
And I'd like to add to that, because at the legislative level, you and I know that often, more often than not, the funding for programs at the grassroots level are the first ones to go, slashed. And there are many needs of individuals working on the front line consistently, but not having the resources to do it. And then what they do is they bring these larger organizations that don't, people that don't look like us, to dispense some of these programs, and they do not incorporate some of these individuals that look like us, individuals of diversity, to work within those programs. And then people come in and they think that they know how our people think. Well, we have to get rid of that plantation mentality. We have to now begin to step up and incorporate everyone into the process. And there are thinkers. There are thinkers around each and every one of these roundtable discussions. That's where I know that we need to start.
Is the money getting to the people who need it the most? The money.
That's
that
the question. Is it getting? It's not.
No. And Dan, just before we go, I just want to encourage and invite people to come join us at our monthly meeting at 285 Church Street, St. Patrick, St. Anthony. We meet there every second Monday of the month at 6:30. Well, we're looking for people to come and get involved.
That's right.
So if you want to know more, if you want to do more, we're giving you the invite now to join us every second Monday at 285 Church Street at 6:30 in the afternoon. Let them know that you're there for the meeting for Mothers United Against Violence. We welcome all because we are really looking for public support.
Absolutely.
Dan, what can I say? We're going to stay right here. We're going to be with them all the way.
Yes, we are.
Both of us are going to be with you.
This is just the first step. Reverend Brown, Henrietta, Bishop Curry, Deborah, and I know Pastor Sam was here, but he had another appointment. Thank you all very much for coming into our studios today.
And thank you for having us.
And thank you for having us.
You're welcome. And remember one thing. Always be good to yourselves. You know why? You couldn't do it for better people.
Right. You know, my motto is every time when I see people I'm with, and when I leave them, I want you to know one thing. If there's nobody today tell you that they love you, we do.
We love you.
All right. By the way, big thank you to Christian Turnquist at the controls, Brad. He did a superb job.
All right.
The views and opinions expressed.